I heard my love was going to Yangchu and went with him as far as Chusan. For a moment, when you held me fast in your outstretched arms, I thought the river stood still and did not flow. I mean, that's passion, right? Love. I shouldn't even tell people. That's good. Slender fingers. Slender, delicate, soft jade, fresh peeled spring onions, they are always hidden in emerald. Sleeves of perfumed silk, yesterday on the lute strings, all their nails were painted scarlet. And if I have time, I actually had read this story, but it was very short, a long time ago, and I found this also at a sale. Have you read Susan Trott, The Holy Man? This is long, and what happens is there's a holy man, and people come, and they line up to meet him, and they all want to meet him, but they all are different people, and so each little two or three pages is about how he opens the door, how he greets them. And the one I heard, I'm just going to tell, is that I knew it. All the people know about this holy man, so somebody in the city heard about him, and so he went to see the holy man himself. And when he got there, there was a huge line going up this mountain, and on top of the mountain there was this house, and that's where the holy man was. And he could see somebody opening and closing the door, but the line was so long, and he was at the end, and he talked to the people in front of them, and they said, oh no, you have to stay here, you can't go up closer, but you wait, you'll get there. And slowly, slowly, the line moved forward, the door would open, the next person would go in, the door would close, then it would be a few minutes, and the second, he finally gets to the top, and he knocks on the door, and the man opens the door, and he greets him, and says hello, and he says, what would you like? And he says, well, I've come to see the holy man. Oh, come in, come in. So he invites him in, and the man takes him through the house and shows him this room and that room, and then goes to the back, and then he opens the back door, and he says, well, goodbye, and thank you for coming. And so he leaves, and he goes down. He's really disappointed. Where was the holy man? And so he gets down there, and he went up to the people who, you know, were online. He says, I waited for hours and hours, and I went all the way up the mountain, and the door opened, and he greeted me in, and he showed me his house. And then he sends me out the back door, and he says, good day. Where was the holy man? Oh, they said, that was he.
And this is a poem that I wrote. It's a memoir in seven parts, and each part is a relationship.
Oh.
A failed relationship, because I keep going on and on until I get to a point when I'm in my 40s and decide to become a single mother by choice. Ode to single mothers by choice. Our bodies cry out for a growing child to fill our wombs. Our homes cry out for family to fill the empty spaces within our walls. For people noises other than TV sitcoms and our favorite ballads of lost love. Our arms cry out for another to hold, to nurture, to stroke with gentleness and caress with caring. Our hearts cry out for love, not so much anymore to have, but to give. We've tried to fill those voids with friends and lovers, with work and passionate causes and other people's kids and our own pets. Nothing does it. Nothing can do it, other than a child. Our child, our own little family, baby and me. Sure, we'd like to have it all, a loving relationship, a partner in life to share these mysteries and joys. Why do you think we waited so long? We still hoped that he would appear one day. But then time ran out. It was on your own or never. Never in this one and only life we're graced with, never being able to have the one thing you've wanted more than anything else. Never felt like death. Never became a very depressing and frightening opinion. Option. Finding a way, some way, anyway, became the goal.
It's called Social Old Lady. So far, the debate over high-tech pregnancies for the postmenopausal has centered on the issue of whether a 75-year-old, possibly senile and walker-bound, is a fit guardian for a child who has reached the gun-toting, coke-snorting stage. This is an interesting question to ponder, but the real issue has to do with the mental competency of any woman who would volunteer for pregnancy, especially when she has the reasonable excuse of old age.
Are such women feminist heroines, as some of the sisters are arguing? Or are they so deeply disturbed that any resulting offspring should be remanded to foster care at the moment of birth? Some will say I am indifferent to the sufferings of the elderly, infertile population, which craves nothing so much as a few toddlers to brighten up life in the nursing home. But the advocates of late-life parturition know nothing of, or else have mercifully forgotten, the experience of pregnancy itself, the nightmarish symptoms, the ghastly, which can leave a woman disfigured for life. If men had to endure even a fraction of this in the cause of reproduction, the nausea, stretch marks, lethargy, hemorrhoids, varicose veins, you may be sure that the right to life movement would fold overnight. Furthermore, and contrary to the impression created by Demi Moore and others in the pregnant pinup line of work, pregnancy has been getting harder, not easier, over time. 2 decades ago, when I was making my own contribution to the continuance of the species, pregnancy was considered so simple that even a 15-year-old could pull it off. True, there were a few prohibitions, as against bungee jumping and kickboxing in the final months, but generally one was encouraged to treat the whole thing as if it were nothing more than a bout of inexplicable obesity. Doctors warned against the consumption of food, which could lead one's husband to wander, but they actively pushed alcohol, which was known to have a soothing effect on the uterine lining. Today, however, a medically correct pregnancy resembles a stay in a drug detox. It is impossible to enter any venue, including an airplane, where alcohol might possibly be imbibed without encountering signs warning how one little nip could make your baby turn out cross-eyed and pinheaded. Self-respecting women are reduced to carrying a flask disguised as liquid iron supplement in order to survive the endless well-meaning lectures on the teratogenic effects of aspirin and coffee and undercooked meat. As for smoking, you might as well snatch an infant from its carriage and publicly strangle it as reach into your maternity smock and pull out a fag. The argument is that if doddering old men can have babies, why shouldn't we? But late-life childbearing is an entirely different matter for old geezers compared to old girls. Not only does a man get to skip pregnancy, but the eventual child is genetically related to him. Not so with a 59-year-old mom who is forced to carry a child conceived through some sort of high-tech hanky-panky by her husband and another woman. Imagine being approached by your husband saying, my girlfriend and I would like to have a child together, but she's awfully vain about her figure, so we are wondering if, Then there is the inevitable outcome so brilliantly portrayed in the movie, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. Not long ago, child raising was sufficiently undemanding that it would be left to servants or to women who were otherwise employed full-time at spinning, sheep herding, and the like. Today, however, the whole business has gotten so complicated and psychologically perilous that able-bodied young couples are routinely reduced to cowering wrecks by some 7-foot-tall toddler or furniture-devouring demon child. But who knows? Perhaps it makes sense to relegate childbearing to the wearers of adult diapers and elasticized slacks. The young and the sound-minded have other options in life, and there's no reason those nursing homes couldn't double as nursery schools with the same calm professional staff tending both baby and mom.